It pays to know your doctor. It pays to know your lawyer. And now more than ever, it pays to know your local real estate professional. Hi, I'm Jeffrey Drake with Drake Realty, and we have 7 offices in the metro Atlanta area, including 2 right here in Cobb County and 1 at Lake Oconee. I'm the proud leader of over 700 agents here in Georgia, and we pride ourselves in professional service, whether you are the buyer or the seller. Drake Realty makes the home buying process seamless from contract to close. Our agents are a little different. They're not pushing for the quick sale and close. They are pushing for the best price and terms for their client. In other words, Drake Realty fights for you. And right now, with the lowest interest rates we have seen in 30 years, now's the time to buy that dream home, vacation home, or new home your family deserves. A lot of real estate agents talk big. Let my team at Drake Realty prove they will fight for you. I'm Jeffrey Drake, and I'd be honored to have my team serve you. Visit us online at drakerealty.com. And remember, it's not how quick you sell or buy, it's what the deal provides for your future.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sunday Cobb Life podcast. This is Cobb Life editor Katie Ruth Camp, and I'm so happy to be joined today by KSU business professor, leadership coach, and motivational speaker, Dr. Ken Harmon. How are you doing today, Ken?
Good, Katie Ruth. I am doing wonderful. Hi, and yourself? You're great?
I'm good. I'm happy and healthy and ready for 2021.
Aren't we all? Yes, I'm ready to do the magic reset, right?
I know. Well, and when this airs, I guess it will be, January 3rd. So welcome to 2021, right?
Yay. Kick it off with happiness.
Yeah. So, Dr. Harmon has spoken on many things before, and I've had him in the magazine before, but I thought this was a perfect time to talk to him about a topic he's very well versed in, happiness. So Dr. Harmon has researched the science behind happiness for over a decade. He speaks to companies and groups across the country on the topic, as well as 7 other countries. And he often speaks to companies about creating positive and productive workplaces and finding overall happiness. And he also has been the motivational and keynote speaker over 80 times. So welcome, Dr. Harmon. Can't wait to hear the secrets to happiness, because I think we could all use them right now.
Well, thank you for having me on here. It's truly an honor, Katie Ruth.
So in your research, I'm sure you've come across a lot of things, but is there one core thing that you have seen that will lead most people to happiness, or that the happiest people find?
Yeah. And I'll give you kind of a classic Ken Harmon long answer. Yes. And I mean, there's a number of things we can point to. Whenever I give my talks, most of my talks, I end up saying, I'm going to give you the secret, and we're going to have the secret at the end and that kind of thing. And leading up to that, I think, is this important idea that it's under our control, that happiness is truly something we can have and we can do it. But most people don't think about actually taking control and making themselves happier, doing something deliberately. And so if I have to boil it down to one thing, it is routinely, deliberately, actively expressing gratitude. I say, thank you is the magic. And so it's like every time you can, look for a way to say thank you to someone. Don't just think it, say it. And so what this is doing, though, there's a deeper science to it, because people say, okay, I'm going to walk around saying it. Thank you. Yay. But the idea is I'm deliberately looking at, and I tell people it's going to feel weird for a while. I'm going to be walking into the Kroger and finding a way to go tell somebody thank you, and I'll do that, but be real about it. Be sincere about it. And so every time you do that, though, you're retraining your subconscious. And this is what most people don't know, is that our lives are driven so much by our subconscious. And so that's telling us how to drive a car, or how to play the piano is a classic example, You don't just learn to play the piano just by sitting down and looking at the notes. You got to practice, and your subconscious takes over. Same thing with happiness. And so every time I say thank you, I'm retraining my subconscious. And then we find in 20 to 30 days, you will be measurably happier, because what's happening is your subconscious is looking now for those opportunities to say thank you, those things to be thankful for, and they're everywhere. I mean, mm-hmm. life is beautiful. You know, this is glass is half empty, half full thing. And both are correct. I'd rather just take the half full approach and say, hey, I'm going to be happier. So I'm going to do it that way. And right. I'm going to retrain my subconscious by saying thank you every time I can.
Well, because I guess you could also train your subconscious in the opposite way. If all you ever think about are the negative things or how bad things are for you or, you know, the distresses that you have, then eventually you're going to train yourself to feel that way and to accept that instead of seeing the joy and the good in things.
And I'm sure everybody listening right now, they're picturing that person, right? Uh-huh. And so, I mean, we all know them, right? And, yeah. And yeah. in fact, it's, I think I've started calling it the cold green beans effect. And, and that, cause we all know that person who, you know, let's go to lunch and they're going to complain about something.
Right.
You know, as they said, the green beans are cold, you know? So that's why I call it the cold green beans effect. It's like, you have a lovely meal in front of you that somebody, you know, painstakingly prepared, and you're going to find something wrong with it. And we know people mm-hmm. who they wake up in the morning looking for something to be wrong. And so mm-hmm. you're right. They've trained themselves to be that. And some people mm-hmm. just think, well, that's just me. Oh, you just got to accept it. That's me. That's you. If you want that to be you,
right?
But if you don't, let's turn that around and make it something else. Yeah.
And I know a lot of times people like that will say, well, I'm just being realistic. But
oh gosh, how many times have I heard that?
Oh yeah. And I mean, I guess there's a question of, you know, realistic versus idealistic. But I almost think to be realistic, you have to be idealistic, right? Does that make sense in a way?
I see what you're saying. And yes, I've heard a lot of that. And so, I mean, you know, and if we can maybe later talk about leadership stuff and all that, because sometimes I have leaders who say, well, I just got to tell it how it is or whatever. And I said, well, you can mm-hmm. still care. And so, this is fairly similar because I hear this a lot, Katie Ruth. It's mm-hmm. Where people are, well, I'm just being realistic. And so I go back to the analogy of the glass half empty, glass half full. I'm just being realistic. That glass is half empty. You're right. It's also half full. And so it is, quote, realistic. It's also realistic to say there's a lot of beauty around us. There are wonderful things everywhere. Are there mm-hmm. bad things around us? There are. However, I know that I'm going to go through this life in a much better way and enjoy it a lot more if I choose to see those things that are beautiful and wonderful around mm-hmm. me and the people and all of this. And so both are realistic is my answer. Both are realistic. I'm going to choose this path because this realistic path is a little prettier than the other.
Right.
I'm going to go down that way, right? Yeah.
Well, and I know in your research before you said that 90% of your happiness comes from within and only yes. about 10% of what makes you happy or your own happiness is external forces. Can you kind of elaborate on that?
Sure. This is where I challenge people a little bit. I will tell them, you know, most of us wake up every day and do everything we can to work against our own happiness. It's not that we're not pursuing it. We're working against it. You know, uh-huh. and I give the example of, you know, look out on the interstate in the morning and you just see a lot of happy people, right? No, you don't. But the idea is most people, if I go to them and say, do you want to be happier? Yes. And so what are you doing then today to become happier? Well, I'm mm-hmm. going to work. I'm going to make that promotion. I'm going to get that salary increase. We're going to go buy the new house. We're going to do this. We're going to take this trip this year. We're going to do all these things. Yes. Go back to my question. What are you doing to be happier?
Yeah.
You're doing all those things. Those things are, go do them. I mean, in fact, trips are wonderful, great things for you, but that's not going to make you happier. Mm-hmm. So you just told me what you're doing. You said nothing to me about what you're doing to become happier. And so mm-hmm. what we learn is, yes, things like health, family, car, house, job, all of these things make a difference. But the research shows they only make about 10% of the difference in your happiness. Mm-hmm. Like you just said, the other 9% is all within you. So I may be going to the same boring job every day and maybe making minimum wage, and I may be the happiest person in the world. And so that's, in fact, there's something I won't elaborate too much today where I call the Hannah effect, which is somebody I knew years and years ago who wasn't far from that and was one of the happiest people I ever knew. And so it's outlook, it's perspective. And so we need to take control of our own happiness and not think that one day it's just going to happen. It's like I say, oh, you want to become a great piano player? Yes, I do. Well, what are you doing? It's just going to happen one day. I'm going to just wake up and be really good at it. And so it's like, no, it doesn't work. That you got to practice. Happiness is the same thing. And that's that 90%. And so it's all under your control is the point. Yes.
I know you've been doing this research for over 10 years. Probably not been a year within that decade like this year where people probably need to hear your happiness talk now more than ever, right?
Maybe.
Has any of that changed because of this year? Because, you know, it's not just certain people that are facing hardships. It's everyone across the world has been impacted by the pandemic and everything else.
Sure.
Have you found that it's harder in times like this for people to say, oh, I'll practice happiness when, you know, there's so many challenges coming to us?
Yeah. And this could get pretty deep in a hurry here. I won't take us too far down that path.
Let's do it.
In fact, I recently wrote something and I have it on my phone. I typed up this long kind of treatise, if you will, called Embracing Sadness. And that's part of happiness as well. And people are like, what? Wait, huh? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, we're humans. We go through things. I can tell you, I'm dealing with some pretty difficult things in my own life right now. And I'm happy. At the same time, there are days where you have to just say, you know what? I got to be sad today. That's how I'm feeling. I'm not going to ignore it. So it's not that you gloss over problems. In fact, it's like I say, when problems come along, you're facing difficulty. That hurts. That's like a physical, it's like almost if you've got a big gash in your arm or something like that, it's going to hurt. Yeah. You don't ignore it. You don't just pretend it's not there. You embrace what is actually happening to you. But what you know, here's the difference, is I know that I'm going to have this time, but I'm going to come out of this and be wonderful. I'm going to be stronger. Because I just expanded my comfort zone by going through this. And so there's really a beauty in embracing whatever you're going through. So this has been a crazy year, just an insane year. And people who are dealing with financial issues and things like that, you can't just gloss them over and that kind of thing. But the difference with somebody who embraces happiness is, I'm going through tough times and I may even have to sit down and cry a little bit. That's okay. That's not the opposite of happiness. In fact, I should say I'm going to be an entire person. But you know what? I know it's going to be better. I know that there are going to be better days. This is not a permanent condition. Right. And I'm not going to let it control me. And just to take it one more step, Katie Ruth, I think the underlying theme to all of this is I'm going to take control of my life. And so I'm going to take control about how I see the world. I'm going to take control of my own happiness. I'm going through tough times, but I know I will get through that and come out on the other side and I'll be okay. So I'm going to take control.
My happiness is my choice.
Bingo. Bingo. Right? Yeah. And this will maybe have an interruption. But actually, I know that, in fact, we can get into stress stuff and all that. But what you find is sometimes when you go through tough times, if you embrace it the right way, you actually come out stronger and better and happier on the other side as well. So,
I had Dr. Ike Reigert on a couple weeks ago, and he touched a little bit on that. He touched a little bit on that too, that, you know, we're all going to face hard times. It's how you deal with them and then how you look back on them that makes the difference.
Yeah, he's a brilliant and wonderful guy. I love him. And so, and I know he carries those kinds of attitudes as well. And that is just so true. I'm sure he always says things in a much more elaborate way and all that than I do. But it's really true that going through this, it's not like, don't let it control me. I'm going through this. I'm going to be sad. I'm going to have some tough times. You know, this gash in my leg is going to heal. Emotional hurt is much the same way. We'll be okay. We'll be okay.
And I think sometimes there's a misconception where people will say, well, of course that person's a happy person because they have a lot of money. They don't have any struggles in their life. They, you know, everything's perfect for them. So of course they're going to be happy, but yet I have a crappy job and a bad home life and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's a lot harder for me to be happy than it is for that person. But at the same time, money and things like that don't necessarily make you happier. It can make things a little less stressful sometimes, but then I guess sometimes it can make things more stressful in some circumstances. But do you see that that's kind of a misconception sometimes? Because even people who've been through a lot can be some of the happiest people, right?
Yeah, very much so. And in fact, essentially you say that because, you know, we oftentimes we drive by the houses, you know, the mansions or something, and you just picture everybody's in there as happy and, you know, that kind of thing. And, and in fact, I think, you know, I'm kind of an old songwriter as well. And I was recently just working on a song, about the flip side of that, that you don't drive by and see just a little bitty house sitting there, you know, very plain, very modest, and think, wow, I bet they're happy.
Yeah.
But then that's what the song is. Once I get it done, that's what it's about, is this idea that there's a couple in there that embrace the little things and each other and are probably some of the happiest people that you may know. And so we sometimes just assume, well, they got all this money, therefore they're happier. Then you've probably heard that question on a couple of my speeches before, where I ask people, would you rather win the lottery? Let's say $30 million. So it's not huge. I mean, it's a huge money for me.
I was going to say, hey, no.
You can't buy the big Gulfstream, right? And so, okay, you're going to win $30 million, or you get diagnosed with a serious illness. Which would you rather have? Well, the research is overwhelming. In about 18 months to 2 years, you're going to be right back to your same level of happiness. Either way. So you can have the $30 million or the bad diagnosis, and either way, you're going to be right back to your same level of happiness. In fact, the diagnosis, that scenario reveals that oftentimes you'll be a little happier with that than you
would have with the $30 million. Because you're grateful for your life and grateful for the things you have. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a wonderful story I love to tell that I gave that in a speech one day, and it was a graduation ceremony. And the next day I was getting out of my car and a woman walked up in the parking lot and said, Dr. Harmon. I said, yeah. She said, I was at your speech yesterday and I want you to know how true that is. And she started getting tears in her eyes. And she said, my husband was diagnosed with cancer a little over a year ago. And he and I have learned what life is truly about. He's doing okay now, but it taught us so much and we are just so much happier at this point in our lives.
Wow.
And that kind of thing that really struck me. I was sitting there trying to, you know, choke back the tears myself as she's talking to me. And I don't know, it was just, it's one of those things. We just assume that money, cars, jets, whatever, just automatically brings the happiness. And I can tell you firsthand, I could give you names, Katie Ruth, I won't. But I mean, some very wealthy people I've met, you know, just might even have like fleets of jets and that kind of thing, who just are very unhappy. And that's too bad. Yeah. You don't have to be.
And I know you've talked to before about, and I guess we might be getting back into this somewhat, but people who, you know, have a high paying job, but they may be in the car for 3 hours a day total commuting. And it's, you talked about this happiness equilibrium. Like, is it worth taking a little bit of happiness away for a little bit more happiness with the money? You know,
yeah,
can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh yeah, you're exactly right. It's what we call in the happiness research, there's something they call the commute paradox. Maybe things are better now. Maybe that's one of the benefits of the pandemic, is that commutes have gotten a little better. But
yeah, or not at all.
Exactly. I commute to my basement, which is where I am now. But people have this assumption that, okay, I'm going to live out here or live somewhere far away from work, and I'm going to commute a long way to my job, and I'll reach an equilibrium of happiness. In other words, or for example, I will have better schools, a bigger house, a bigger yard, a better situation for my family. Mm-hmm. But the better paying job is over here. And so I got to bridge that gap by having a long commute either way. Right. And so we think it equals out, that it will equalize in terms of happiness. And that's what the paradox is it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Long commutes drain you. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there was one calculation I saw that always struck me. It said for every hour of a commute, you should be paid 40% more to get close to equilibrium. And so that's a pretty big difference. Wow. Oftentimes. Yeah. And so people will say, well, what should I do? I say, take a lower paying job near your house or move closer to work. Mm-hmm. And on average, you'll be happier just with a shorter commute. Commutes make a difference, which is also why I've advised companies for years to do more teleworking. Not 100%. We still need to be with people sometimes, mm-hmm. but allow flexibility, allow telework. And I can tell you that's one of the outcomes of the pandemic is people are loving working from home. Sometimes they might get a little tired of it, you know, with the dog walking in the background or whatever, but actually that people are really enjoying that and improves the culture as well.
Uh-huh. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we will be back with Dr. Ken Harbin.
During difficult times, it can help to talk to a friend or neighbor. But once in a while, you need a lawyer. You need Atlanta's caring lawyers, Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen. If you're considering ending your marriage, struggling with a stressful job situation, dealing with a devastating personal injury, or facing end-of-life issues, the team at Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen is here for you. The Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen team has been serving Marietta and Metro Atlanta since 1972. They believe that getting the best possible outcome for their clients begins with energetic and dedicated preparation. From starting a new business to planning an estate, Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen have the experience to guide you through some of life's most challenging legal issues. So, the next time you need a cup of sugar or a ride to work, go ahead and call your next-door neighbor. But for the important life issues, turn to the experts, Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen. To schedule an information session or case evaluation session, call 770-528-0150. That's 770-528-0150. Cawthorn, Knorr, and Owen, Atlanta's caring lawyers. You can search all over America, but you'll find America's largest gun store in Cobb County, Georgia. Adventure Outdoors, proud supporter of the Second Amendment and the red, white, and blue, with over 18,000 guns in stock every day. Did you know Adventure Outdoors is also home to one of Georgia's largest shooting ranges? The Remington Range, with basic range memberships starting at only $25 per month, which includes unlimited lane rental, 3 free firearm rentals per month, free shirt and hat, priority lane placement, and guest passes. Adventure Outdoors also offers family, corporate, and group plans. One of America's top shooting facilities is right here in Cobb County, and for only $25 a month, you can be a member and receive unlimited lane rentals and so much more. Support the Second Amendment and your right to own and bear arms, and practice and learn at Adventure Outdoors Remington Range today. Adventure Outdoors, South Cobb Drive in Smyrna, or online at adventureoutdoors.us.
Happy holidays from all of us at Credit Union of Georgia. This holiday season, remember, you deserve better than your bank. Better service, better rates, better solutions. That's why we've taken the time this year to revamp our online tools to give you the safest options when it comes to your money. Open a personal or business account in just minutes. We have new digital tools like our mobile app to make your life simpler. We offer auto loans from 1.89%. Need a mortgage? Our team can get you a home for the holidays. If you live or work in Cobb County, now is the perfect time to make the switch to Credit Union of Georgia, the better way to bank. Since 1960, Credit Union of Georgia has been providing Northwest Georgia with financial solutions that make sense for your home, business, and family. Become a member today or apply for a loan by visiting www.cuofga.org. That's www.cuofga.org. Credit Union of Georgia, the better way to bank.
Okay, we are back with Dr. Ken Harbin. He is here to talk to us about the science behind happiness, and it's probably something we all should be trying to learn right now as we put 2020 in the dumpster fire that it was behind us. So I know you said you've been researching this for a little over 10 years, but how did you get into this research?
I will say there were I'm going to give three episodes. I don't often do that. I'm going to give three bits. Okay. I'll be quick. One goes way back. I mean, way back when I was a faculty member at the University of Missouri. And I remember talking to some faculty members in management. And we got in one of these kind of philosophical discussions at this place called the Old Heidelberg across the street. And I started asking, I said, what's the role of love in management? And so I started getting into this idea of kind of, you know, this caring about other people and, you know, those kinds of things and just kind of the soft skills. I was trying to explore that area. And then there was about 10 years later than that, I was personally going through some difficult situations and I walked into a bookstore, if we can remember what those are, a bookstore and grabbed some books. And one of them was this simple little book called Being Happy. And again, it was based on something that's called psychocybernetics, all this kind of stuff written years and years ago. But this guy had taken this from kind of a lighthearted approach to this, but really got into what's behind the happiness. Mm-hmm. Then we go forward another number of years. And this is probably the biggest one. And this is one I reference the most. I was working on leadership. So going back to this leadership idea and, you know, what is it about great leaders and what's different about them? And so I heard Daniel Gilbert being interviewed on the radio and he had just written this book called Stumbling on Happiness. Huh. And he's one of these brilliant people who makes everything, you know, sound easy and fun and he breaks it down really well. But he'd written this great book called Stumbling on Happiness, probably the most influential book of my life. And it was the research on happiness. So he kind of synthesized all the research on happiness, what really makes us happy and what really doesn't make us happy, how our memories are flawed, how we can perceive things will be a certain way or were a certain way in the past. And usually our minds are just wrong. And so I just kept hitting on that. And then I put together this idea that, wait a minute, there's something about great leadership and understanding happiness that seemed to go hand in hand. So mm-hmm. I just started exploring that connection, which got me, if you look at my bookshelves back here, some over there, there's lots of happiness books.
And all your I just happy can't books, get enough. Right?
Yeah, yeah, happy books. And so I'm reading all the time about research on happiness. I get feeds in from Google every day on the research on happiness, et cetera, and the positive psychology and those kinds of areas. And so it fit my personality, I guess. I just love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I just happened to stumble on those books or those, you know, life events, and they kind of led all to this idea of exploring it. And I just can't get enough of it.
Yeah. Where did you grow up? Let's hear a little bit about your background.
Memphis.
Really?
Memphis, Tennessee. Yeah. My family goes way back in Memphis, and you know my parents were high school sweethearts in Memphis, and my grandparents from Memphis, and all of that. And in fact, my mother is still there and in the same place. And my sister is a business professor and accounting professor also. She's at Rhodes College, and she's up there. I got another sister in Huntsville, and. But anyway, I grew up in Memphis and like I say, just an old Memphis guy. And then I've lived everywhere since I started being what I call an academic vagabond. And,
what led you to education?
Here's a weird story. And so I was a CPA. And so I was working at a CPA firm. I didn't enjoy it. And according to all the psychology analyses and whatever, you know, Myers-Briggs or whatever, I should not have enjoyed it. and so anyway, I was not enjoying it. My sister had started teaching at a college in Missouri with a master's degree in accounting. And I was talking to her about what she was doing. I said, that sounds fun. And I used to do tutoring sessions and all when I was a student at University of Tennessee. And so I used to enjoy that. And so I was thinking about it, and I was in the parking lot one day with a friend of mine on this audit. We were doing an audit of this big company. We're standing near our cars, and I said something to him about, you know, I'm wondering about going back to school and becoming a teacher or something like that. And my nickname was Bullet. Don't ask. And so he goes, and so he said,
story for another time, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so he said, Bullet, that's you. You need to go do that. So within about a month and a half, I had packed everything up and moved back to Tennessee and was getting my master's degree. And they said, you know, I said, do you have any classes you would let me teach? And they said, we don't have any accounting classes, but here's an operations management class. We think you could teach that. And just handed me the book and said, go teach it. And I did. And then they said, well, if you really want to teach, you need to get a doctorate. And so they put together a custom program for me that was streamlined at the University of Tennessee. So I ended up just staying there and have been doing it for, good gosh, how long has it been since I got my doctorate? 38 years, something like that.
Oh my gosh. And
so, yeah. And so it was just the best discovery of my life to get into academics and education. Yeah.
Well, I know you said a lot of what you've been speaking on now, especially to companies and stuff, is how to manage stress. Yes. And I'm sure you've dealt with a lot of stress in your own, in your own 38 years of teaching and moving up the ladder and figuring out where you want to be and what you want to do.
Right. Yes, I have. So you want to talk about stress a little bit?
Yeah.
Let's All right. And you're right. That's a number of times I've talked to companies or organizations this year, and almost every time they say, and can you talk to us a little bit about stress? Can you work in stress? Because everybody's so stressed, you know, and this kind of thing. And it's true, but there's, and so I got into the research on stress and I find it fascinating because if you talk to people, we'll say, you know, they'll say, you know, we're all stressed and stress is killing us. You know, it's harmful. And it's true. There's with a lot of stress, we find it, and something I can testify to, you gain weight around the mid torso. It can increase your likelihood of diabetes, increase your likelihood of stress, heart rates, all kinds of issues, right? So there's lots of negatives that can happen. So we deal with coping mechanisms, or how do I cope? And it's true. There are great coping mechanisms about, you know, we talk about living in day-tight compartments. Sometimes I'll tell people, if you're extreme stress, live in hour-long compartments. I'm going to do this at this time and get it done. Then think about this. And there's something else I call the shut up technique, which is it's kind of my own thing about just like, you know, you just tell yourself to shut up if you're dwelling on things or being too negative in your mind, right?
Sure, yeah.
And it helps. And so, but there's other, here's what I think is fun though. When it comes to stress, we talk about coping with it. It's like, oh, it's hard. It's bad. It's not good for us. So if I can just take a second here, and there's two studies and I'll be real quick with them. One study had 1,000 participants in it, and that study asked whether you've had high or low levels of stress in the last year. Okay. There was a second question, say, what do you do in your own time to help others? Okay. Mm-hmm. So what they found was that people who had had major stress in this last year had a 30% increased risk of dying.
Wow.
It's a big number. However, if you then say, what about people who had high levels of stress but tended to help others, had 0% increased risk of dying.
Wow. Yeah.
And so here's the other one, the second study, and it's over 30,000 people in this study. They studied these people over 8 years. And so they asked them two questions. How much stress have you had over the last year? And so again, you get categorical stress, high, you know, extreme stress, et cetera. And so the other question they asked them was, do you believe stress is harmful to your health? This is my favorite one. So people who had extreme levels of stress in the last year had a 43% increased risk of dying. However, if they did not see stress as being harmful. So remember, they asked that question, is stress harmful to you or not? If I said, no, not really, but I've had a lot of stress, 0% increased risk of dying. Huh. So in other words, how we view stress is how our body responds to stress. So this goes back to me like happiness, Katie Ruth. I mean, it's this idea that I'm going to take control here. Yeah, I'm facing some stress. I'm going through some tough times. It's not going to kill me. It's just part of what I go through, and I'll be okay. In fact, if anything, it's going to make me stronger. If I keep that attitude, stress is not going to take me over and do the really bad stuff to me. And that's what I love, because there's this common theme that keeps working through here that it's under my control. I can take care of this, and I can handle my own happiness. I can even handle my own stress and be okay. So I give a lot of tips on coping and all that, and sometimes you just got to do it. There are days that it's just like, oh gosh, you know, I got to do something here. So you get those techniques, whether you're doing yoga or meditation is wonderful. It makes a big difference. Those kinds of things. But to understand that in the long run, it's under your control.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today, Dr. Harmon, and giving us all this wonderful insight into happiness and dealing with stress. And hopefully some of us can remember some of these as we go into 2021. Hopefully hope for a better and happier year, right?
I have no doubt it will be. And Katie Ruth, thank you. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
I'll see you on Kennesaw Mountain again.
Exactly.
Like every time I go hiking.
We see each other on the mountains, so that's a good thing. So I need to get back out there some more and see you some more.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. Thank you so much, Dr. Harmon.
Thanks, Katie Ruth.
Bye.
Thank you for joining me for the Cobb Life edition of the Marietta Daily Journal podcast from your local news source, the Marietta Daily Journal and MDJ Online. Be sure to pick up a copy of this month's Cobb Life magazine and visit us online for more complete details on the stories we've discussed, plus more stories that affect you and the people of Cobb and surrounding areas. Subscribe and share this podcast to get all the latest hyperlocal updates, plus great stories about what makes living in Cobb so special. Or ask Alexa or Google Home to play the Marietta Daily Journal podcast for you. Share your thoughts or questions with us in the comments section or call the MDJ podcast comment line at 404-997-8655. We might even share your comment on an upcoming episode. The MDJ podcast is produced by BG Ad Group. Jacob Sutherland, Director. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.
This podcast is brought to you in part by AM 920 The Answer, Atlanta's home for news, opinion, and insight. Just go to am920theanswer.com to listen live. That's am920theanswer.com.